stuff submitted in the subcommittee until other members arrive at such time that we'll become the full operating subcommittee. This morning we are having a public hearing carried over from May 4th and a possible work session on Senate Bill 5522, the Public Utility Commission. We have approximately 1 hour here this morning to complete work on presentations from your agency. And at 9 o'clock we have a commitment to turn over to Bureau of Labor and Industries and do a work session on their budget. So if we can get you to make whatever presentation and kind of wrap it up about 8:45, I think we'll be in good shape.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We thought in the interest of time with what we might do is just simply start in with the budget itself and review the budget packages. We thought the first thing would be valuable to do is to give a description of how we got from where we are now to the current service level budget to the governor's recommended budget. And it is page, I think, about page 11, the visuals are not there. Mr. Chairman, would it be okay if I perhaps stood?
Sure, absolutely. Turn this end microphone. This end microphone is gorgeous on the white sheet picked up.
It's not just to give an idea of how we got to where we are, where the budget packages fit, and then we can go through the individual budget packages. What occurred last in the last biennium was that it was the first biennium that we were operating without the Department of without the transportation section that we previously had. So the legislature and the PUC, not knowing exactly what our resource needs were going to be, built in, frankly, a little bit of leeway so that we would have make sure we had enough to do the job, but not really knowing how much we might need. So our estimated actual expenditures were actually below what the legislature approved. And they were this estimated actual for $23 million. That includes costs for budget packages we're proposing that were absorbed during the biennium. Part of that is the classification of administrative some personnel, and then the consumer services, which were the temporary personnel to meet our workload that we're trying to make permanent through the FTE approval. Those absorptions get us up to the estimated actual expenditures for this biennium. We get to the current service level budget through a whole series of adjustments that are traditional being made by DAS. PERS adjustments, merit increases, our vacancy factor, personnel service actions, inflation, state government surcharge, et cetera. Those items here total about $1 million. And then we have the Residential Service Protection Fund program addition to get us up to maintaining our current service level for that. For the relay contract, some contingency money for
contingency money. We believe that the federal government is going to require states to provide speech to speech services.
Just the fiscal impact of Senate Bill 297, which takes our eligibility standards and conforms them to Department of Human Resources eligibility standards. Because in order to save money, we actually try and use their standards. Their standards change. Ours happen to be a statute, so we've got to change them. That's the fiscal impact. The growth in the OTAP, there's a
that's for video relay interpretation. For the video monitor relay.
Okay. So we have in here not directed. We have in here about $3 million on RSPF in order to maintain our current service level that we add to the estimated actual expenditures. We have our information resource management plan, small federal funds adjustment, and the only, so with RSPF and with the other DAS adjustments, the only additional things that are in here are really we're absorbing some of the portion of one of the safety inspectors, which is financed through the other half coming from federal funds. So this is how we get, with these adjustments, we get from total, from the actual to our current service level budget. This is what it takes to maintain current service level. Then these are the individual packages in addition to the current service level of how we get to the governor's recommended budget. And what I thought I'd do is go through every one of our budget packages as quickly as I can. I don't, with the exception of maybe a couple, I don't think they're very too complicated. But that's how we got from our actual to the current service level budget, and then these are the additions in the governor's recommended budget over and above our current, maintaining our current service level.
Okay, thank you. So you're going to turn to the budget document itself?
Yes, I think we'll go through the budget document.
On what page?
Mr. Chairman. I think the first one is in the utility program section.
Page 50.
The budget package begins on page 61.
Okay.
Chairman, members of the committee, this first package is really implementation of the classification plan approved by the emergency board in January of 1998, and we reclassify utility analyst positions and provide comparable reclassifications for the program managers. And this is, I believe what occurred here is that E-Board approved the classifications, but not all of the money. And
Senator Liv, or Senator, you were on page 51 in the binder, in your white binder there.
Thank you.
Page 51, utilities. Utility program.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, changes the classification for 36 positions. We have what amounts to kind of what we call a compression problem in salaries. This and without the adjustment, a number of managers will be classified at the same salary level as our senior staff, and it also places the program manager positions into the same classification. It's basically following the classification plan approved by the board, and the fiscal impact is $234,000 total.
Is this a program that says $230,806 on other funds? Are these funds that are generated by your assessment that you showed on the utilities?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, that's correct. That's our only source of funds.
As the net effect of this, does that mean a potential increase to utilities?
Mr. Chairman, no, it doesn't necessarily mean a potential increase. The amount of funds is that we charge is affected by a number of factors. It's affected by the budget that's approved and how much we spend, but it's also affected by how much the utility revenue is. It depends to some degree on how much utility revenue goes up, because the fee is based on a certain percentage of a dollar of gross revenue, it's entirely possible that our budget could go up, utility revenues could go up, and the fee could go down. So there's a number of factors, and there is a cap by statute on how much we can charge the utilities. It's 25.0025 cents per dollar on revenues, and I think it's 18.18 cents. Yeah, per kilowatt hour for electricity. Okay. So none of these necessarily raise what we have to charge. What we have to charge depends upon utility revenue and expected expenses.
But the $230,000 that shows the fiscal impact, that is to give the step increases or reclassification increases to these employees.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. That's to implement the classification plan that was approved by the emergency board.
Okay. Representative Beck, did you have a question? Oh. Excuse me, go ahead.
The next budget package in the utility program is option package 103, and this is for Attorney General services. We have some information to provide you on our workload in this area. Basically, what has occurred is that we are experiencing a significant increase in the need for legal assistance. This is due to increased telecommunications contested case hearings, rate cases, other appeals, and electric industry restructuring cases and issues. Our workload has gone up as the industries are restructuring. More and more legal issues need to be worked out, and we have more and more cases. In our cases, we have Attorney General's Office assistance to the staff in making its preparing its testimony and its position in those cases. The Commission has other assistance in our review of the cases, and in addition to that, we have increased level of court activity after we make the decision. We estimate the fiscal impact of this would be $390,000. During last biennium, we needed to increase the number of Attorney General hours above the base budget. We had to do that in each year, and that resulted in a higher expenditure level that we expect to continue to increase in the next biennium. We're requesting an increase based on an additional 177 hours of legal services. I believe an adjustment actually has been made based on a lower per hour fee. But we do have some information that has been passed out about the increase in
Representative Butler.
That's 177 hours per month for the next biennium, in addition to the Attorney General fees that would be in your CSL.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler, that's correct.
You know how many hours there are in your CSL on a monthly basis?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler, it's 136
hours a month. So,
okay. Right. We are currently using 536 and paying for the another 100 out of services and supplies.
A 41% increase in the Attorney General fees in terms of the number of hours.
Commissioner, does the 41% increase in the Attorney General services reflect a commensurate increase in the amount of appeals and contested hearings?
Mr. Chairman, yes, it does. If you look at
this chart, which we've prepared for you,
okay.
It demonstrates the increase in the number of utility orders that we have issued, and my understanding from staff is that in 1998, the line actually goes up to over 500. So we have an increase in the number of orders that we issue. Every order we issue involves the Attorney General's office, and by either advice to staff if they are participating as an independent party in a particular case, or by review of the Attorney General's office and legal advice to the Commission as we prepare the final order. So separate from any court appeals, we have significant increase in the workload for the attorney and our need for assistance from the Attorney General's office. We also have
Representative Butler.
I'm wondering what's happened since 1991 when we were averaging something between 150 and 200 hours per year, for year after year after year after year, and what changed in the organization in 1991? What's the significant changes that have occurred within the organization, within the industry, within? Is that when they first introduced cell phones? What's happened? Maybe give me some flavor.
And Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler, a number of things occurred in the telecommunications industry. We began the process of increased competition. We had increased applications for certificates of authority for competitive providers. We had increased applications for changes in prices and services, some of which the Commission has had to open up investigations on, or some of which other parties requested opening of investigations. We had increased desire for extended area service. We had the Telecommunications Act, which took effect in 1996, but then added additional increases for arbitration.
Telecommunications Act is 1996.
Yes. That added additional workload for arbitration cases. We had issues with more players in the market. There are more issues that need to be resolved. More disputes that need to be resolved.
Yes, please, Eric. Rather than go on in that regard, the examples that we used yesterday indicated that the majority or a vast majority of these new companies, I think there's only of the, I think the information that was given to us is that there's like 25 telephone companies out there plus four big ones, and the majority of these new telephone companies are not regulated. Probably not regulated or not regulated was the response that we got with regard to the other two. That so what do we got here? We've got four telephone companies that were in the process of regulating in 1992, so that the increased competition, the after 1992, we're saying that the companies that aren't regulated are costing us more. Doubling, tripling, and quadrupling the number of hours for attorney general fees for the non-regulation, or I need some help with that.
Okay. In order to be a competitor in the state, you have to get a certificate of authority from the commission. That increased early on some of our workload dealing with some of those applications. Some of which in the early stages were contested very heavily. In addition, what an introduction of competition has done is it has stimulated utilities that we regulate to change their operations in many ways. And sometimes those change in operations, be it the nature of the service provided or be it the pricing of the service provided, generates issues for which all of those competitors as well as customers often have disputes over the way the utility approaches that. You have more players. You have more service offerings, more changes in those service offerings, and that generates, I would call it just in a general term, more disputes, more issues that need to be resolved, more issues for the commission. On the electricity side, we are again approaching a situation in which you are restructuring that industry. It simply raises more issues, it introduces more players, and it creates more disputes as utilities try and change their operations to face the current situation. In addition, one particular case can generate others. We also have an increase in complaints, and although many of them don't result in orders, we do have an increase in formal complaints. This is a picture of all of our orders. Now, some orders are pretty routine, some orders are pretty extensive and involve a great deal of work. What we wanted to do is give you a general idea that there is a general increase, significant increase over time in our workload, and that in particularly in the last 2 years, we have had a significant increase in that. And I believe it is primarily related to the introduction of competition, to the changes in the industry, which generate more players, more changes in services, more decisions which the commission has to make.
They represented that, Mr. Chair. Isn't a lot of this change technologically driven as well? I mean, just number of fax machines and pagers and new phone numbers, and isn't that driving industry to respond? I mean, that.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Beck, to some extent, yes, that's true. I mean, well, Representative Butler is correct. We don't regulate all of these things. What we do regulate is utilities, and they respond to those. In some cases, they try and provide their own comparable service, or they try and change their service in the way they price it in order to respond to that. And those changes, some are routine, some are challenged. What you have, for example, I will use the interconnection as an example. You have competitors that depend upon the local exchange company in order to have access to customers. You have these competitors who also compete with these local exchange companies. So now you have more than just the customer that's concerned about these changes that the utility makes. You have the competitors. It simply generates more disputes, and it generates more changes. Much of what we do now is not done. We have major rate cases, but much of what we do and much of our orders are not related to rate case orders. They were related to changes over service, or disputes over that service, and that simply has increased. With the coming of competition, with more competition in both the energy sector and the telecommunications sector, and with the Telecommunications Act, our workload increased significantly because we do arbitration. And we approve those arbitration orders, and those arbitration orders end up being amended or having changes. So it is an ongoing process of dispute resolution and a job we have been given by the federal government to do.
Are you
finished?
Okay. Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of the things that we've asked of our health-related licensing board and some of the other folks that brought in the fact that they had a lot of additional and new complaints and difficulties was we just kindly asked them to try and categorize the kinds of things that they were having to respond to so that we would have some feel when they were asking for additional inspectors or additional examiners and those kinds of things. And I think it might be appropriate when we've got these 300-400% increases in the number of orders and a 41% increase in requests in this year alone of a number of hours for attorney general's fees or attorney general hours, that I obtained a list of a few of the items that that may generate these orders, but I would like to have maybe a breakdown of where we anticipate that there will be the 500 orders in 98 or even the 400 orders that are finished in 97 and I've obtained from some of the staff 4, 5, 6 different areas: rate case activities, tariff filings, access filings, extended area service filings, annual report issues, competition issues, and there perhaps are others, but I guess is there some way that you could take the 400 cases, approximately 400 cases from 97, for instance? I'm not looking for the 500 cases that happened in 1998 necessarily, but unless those are fresher and more fresh in your mind, could we get a breakdown amongst, you know, what are the kinds of activities that we want to expend this additional 41% on for this next year? What's the total? What do the cases look like, broken down into those various areas?
As far as following up on your question, I think what you're really asking for is how many cases were initiated by the utilities versus how many cases were initiated by the PUC.
And what was the nature of them? Were they rate cases? Were they tariff filings?
What they want to see is how much is it because of technology or change in practices or whatever else, so we can look at what is the track record here. Because this does show a substantial increase going back up in 97, and you indicated 98 still goes above that yet. So there's something that's driving this other than just the companies coming in and expending their service area or something. And that's what you're trying to get
exactly at. Mr. Chair, and you have the institutional memory here. I'm sorry to pick on you, but is there something that's not obvious that happened? That we should know about that happened in 1992 that, or 91, 92 that changed. I'm looking for, and I really don't know. I have no axes to grind. I'm just saying, what jumped it from? I mean, that's 100% jump in 1 year, and then it has continued a fairly steep climb since that time.
Which year did we go from a single to a three-member commission?
Mr. Chairman, we did that in 1987. Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler, there are two primary reasons I can think of as to why you see changes here. In 1991, it's the beginning of the development of competitive providers through legislation and through commission action. And 1996, of course, passed through the Telecommunications Act. And then throughout all of that, we've had the various degrees of introductions of competitive issues in the energy area as well. So we have not only had, I think, an increase in the number of orders for the reasons that I've described, but also some of the orders themselves are very significant and take a great deal of time. Not only the rate cases, but the examination of the unbundling of individual services, extensive unbundling of services, and the pricing of those, the cost methodology and the pricing of those took a great deal of time. You simply have more competitors, more services, more disputes. And this is related to orders. It's not related to litigation. I have some information that our litigation numbers are also increasing.
You have that charted out. Excuse me, Mr. Chair, is that charted out?
I don't have it charted out. I just got it yesterday afternoon, but I can give you the figures. We have 25 pending court cases and one that the commission will be filing. In all 25 cases, the PUC is the defendant, meaning that we did not initiate any of the cases. The one case that we'll be filing is an exception. Pacific Court has sued Emerald Public Utility District over issues of allocation of territory, and the PUC will be intervening as a plaintiff in that case. But in all 25 pending court cases, we are a defendant. 13 of the court cases are telecommunications, 13 are energy. Of the 13 telecommunications cases, 7 of them are arbitration orders resulting from the Telecommunications Act activity. Of those 7, 4 have gone to the Ninth Circuit Court, Federal Court. The PUC did not appeal those cases. 2 rate-related orders against U.S. West. In one, the PUC terminated the alternative form of regulation and determined a method of refund. In the other, the PUC established a revenue requirement. This case is currently still on appeal. It is the only case that involves service quality, and service quality is not the only issue in that case. We have 3 cases related to the building blocks, which I mentioned. Those cases were brought by U.S. West and GTE. We have 1 case involving whether or not Lincoln County needs a competitive provider certificate. On the energy side, 8 cases have been brought by one person, Dan Meek, on behalf of the Utility Reform Project. 2 cases have been brought by the Citizens Utility Board with the Utility Reform Project as an intervener, and 2 have been brought by customers, Home Builders and Fort James. There is 1 case from an energy developer, Oregon Energy Company. In all 13 cases, we are on the same side as the utility, which is either PGE or Pacific Corp. How long ago was it?
5
years ago, we only had 10 cases
total
on litigation. In litigation. Okay. Now we have 25.
1994, 5 years ago.
Yes.
Ten cases total.
So we've not only had an increase in orders, we've had an increase in litigation. And one of our difficulties in costs here is that we are the only agency in the state for which our orders have to go to the circuit court first prior to the Court of Appeals. All other administrative agencies go directly to the Court of Appeals. We have tried to change this for the last 5 sessions to avoid the duplication of time and cost it takes to go to 2 different courts, because frankly, once it goes to the circuit court, if it's of any consequence, whoever loses will take it to the appellate court. We end up there anyway. Last session, the bill passed the House nearly unanimously. It passed the Senate committee unanimously, but it was pulled at the last minute from the Senate floor. This session, it has passed the House again, nearly unanimously. One of the most significant things that could be done to reduce costs without affecting anybody's rights as a litigant, either ours or anyone else's, would be to send our cases directly to the Court of Appeals. That would not only reduce our costs, it would reduce other parties' costs, and it would certainly speed up the process so that the issues that we face on resolving competition transition in both energy and telecommunications could be resolved more quickly. It can add 6 to 9 months, and sometimes cases a year, to the process having to go to circuit court first.
Yes, Representative, go ahead.
Do I understand that of 1998 cases, 7 of them have gone all the way to the Ninth Circuit?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler, under the Telecommunications Act, these cases can be appealed to, some have been appealed to the federal court as a jurisdiction issue. They did not go through the state courts and then to the federal court. They were appealed first to the federal court.
I see. So they were directly to the Ninth Circuit.
Yes.
I see. Okay, thank you. I didn't understand the court venue.
Senator Yee.
Well, I've been during the 1995 session, a big part of your program has been moved to transportation. Well, are you showing any drop in orders issued in 1995 because of that transfer?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Yee, the figures we have here are for utility orders only. They are not for transportation orders. There would be a significant, huge drop in total orders from the commission. But we are a commission now that does just utility work. The data that reflects here is only previous utility work. So we are trying to compare apples to apples in this case.
Well, I see. Because I thought it was it should show some reduction also.
That's in a separate category.
Only.
Okay. Yeah, this is utility only because we already transferred transportation to ODOT.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, further questions? Not if you'd like to continue, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That, I believe, concludes basically the program option package in 103.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Yee,
what is the bill number you refer to that will help
Senator
you?
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, the House Bill 2572, in gross.
Passed the House.
It passed the House nearly unanimously.
And it is now in Senate committee.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, it's in the Senate Business and Consumer Affairs Committee.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, another question. So if that bill passes, is this going to reduce your convicted workload and convicted need for staff?
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, we predict that it could reduce it $45,000 to $50,000 over the biennium. Yes, it would have an impact.
Well, that's not... So how many hours of reduction would it be for the need for Attorney General service?
At $90 an hour, I need my calculator.
About 50.
50 hours?
Mr. Chairman, you need that for it.
Mm-hmm. So another question.
Yes, please.
So if that bill passes, is the budget going to be adjusted to show the reduction?
Mr. Chairman, yes, we could adjust it to reflect that.
Mm-hmm. Are you talking about 50 hours a month?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Mm-hmm. So how much would it be for the 2 years?
Well, 50 times
20. $1,200.
About $1,200. That's
1,200 hours. Mm-hmm. So at $90 an hour.
Okay. And this is just in the ballpark.
Chairman Senator Yee, we would assume that if it was changed, we would alter that the budget would reflect that change. It's difficult to some extent to predict because since these are not cases that we necessarily initiate, it's difficult for us to predict exactly how much work we will actually have.
Mm-hmm.
The frustration is as much in cost as it is in time that it takes. These are issues that you add 6 to 9 months to the process. It takes that much longer for the issue to be resolved. It takes that much longer for the transition from regulation to competition to occur. In fact, this is one of the problems we've had with the Telecommunications Act, is that there are so many court cases at the federal level that affects what we do at the state. And we're not only, to some extent, waiting on issues at the state level, we're waiting on issues at the federal level. The less time that it takes to run through the courts, the sooner we'll know the answer to those issues, and the sooner we'll know the basis upon which we can make the transition from regulation to competition.
Kath, you want to make a comment?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to correct something I said earlier. I misunderstood, Rick. I thought the $45,000 to $50,000 was in savings was per year, per biennium, so that would mean a reduction of about 500 hours per biennium.
Not 1,200.
Right.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, is the committee going to reduce the budget by that amount based on passage of House Bill 2572?
Probably not. We'll probably deal with the budget. If 2572 passes, then it'll come back down and they'll make the final adjustment by reducing the amount of their budget. Unscheduled is different, I would assume. That's typically how it's handled, rather than predicating the budget on something that may or may not happen.
Mm-hmm. Because, you know, we just passed the Employment Division's budget, and we take away the amount.
There is a bill that has already passed. 2572 hasn't passed.
Well, I think we hit the budget with a prediction that the bill passes. But we unscheduled the amount. That has to do with the child care center inspection.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Right.
So we unscheduled the amount until the bill passes. So we can.
And that's all we would do with that.
We can do the same thing, though. We can unschedule the $50,000.
Correct.
Based on passage or non passage of the bill.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair?
Senator Duke.
Well, this is a bill with a really lousy track record. I mean, anticipating passage. I was just somebody who was telling how many times they brought that thing forward. And I don't know what the problem is in the Senate, but it doesn't seem to do well, folks.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Duke, so I can briefly go through the history. The first time we introduced the bill, we had some conflicts with the Marion County Circuit Court itself in the way the bill was worded. By the time we got those resolved, we weren't able to take action. The next session, we got those resolved. It passed one chamber, and it got hung up in the last minute workload. There was a pretty significant workload of one of the judiciary committees, and it wasn't able to get out. The third session, we actually got it out by including it as part of an overall judicial reform bill. It was a small part of it. Unfortunately, the governor vetoed the whole judicial reform bill over some other issues. Last session, it passed the House and came over to the Senate, and it was pulled in somewhat of an X-Files mystery at the last minute and never revised. On the House side, the judge from the Marion County Circuit Court testified in favor of the bill. We've never had any utility in the last two sessions come forward or any other party and oppose the bill in hearings, but for some reason it was pulled at the last minute in the last session. I'm hopeful. It puts us in a difficult position. We are told all the time, well, it just takes you too long for things to happen. And at the same time, we can't get rid of this 6 to 9 month time period that's really duplicative because we somehow, when they pass the Administrative Procedure Act reform and send everybody else to the appellate court, we got left out. There really is no reason at all for us to have to go to the circuit court first.
I would like to urge you, we have approximately 12 minutes left before we go into work session, I'm fully to concentrate on your decision packages and so we can look at those and try to wrap up presentation this morning.
Chairman, members of the committee, the next decision package is Adoption Program 105, which is the Building Utility Program on page 65. This enables the PUC to meet increasing demand for safety and engineering services. At present, we're not able to keep up with the inspections necessary to ensure utilities are complying with safety standards. And in this case, while we do not regulate the rates and services of the utilities, we are charged with the enforcement of the National Safety Code for all the utilities in the state. What this does is that we currently have only two FDE really remaining to perform the inspections for more than 150 utility operators, and the number of operators is increasing, and it's expected to grow over the next 10 years, and we also have a concern that as competition increases, we do not want safety to be sacrificed to gain competitive edge. So we feel an increasing need for safety inspections. This adds two FTE, one of which is shared, one of which is for natural gas and is shared with federal funds. In the handout we've given you on a copy of our visuals, we have a visual, you want to put it up? We have a performance measurement internal on inspection days, and as you can see, since 1994, we simply have not been able to quite meet our goals, and so we're asking for two additional inspectors, one of which would be paid in part by federal funds, and the fiscal impact is $157,000 in other funds and $71,000 in federal funds.
It's just a direct result of deregulation, I assume, and alternate energy and telecommunications providers, and as time goes on, that's only going to increase. Is there a certain amount of years built into these two positions before you think you're going to need more positions?
I don't, Mr. Chairman, Representative Schrader, I don't think we have projected a point in time in which we will need additional positions. We're really trying to keep up with what we have is the same amount of utilities but more providers, so we've got more people accessing the lines, and we've got more concerns about the impact of cost considerations on safety. We have more pipelines being constructed, but we think that with these two we can go for a substantial amount of time without needing additional personnel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just curious to know, are we have unsafe conditions out there right now?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Starr, I think in some areas that we probably do. And what we've tried to do in our inspections, because we can't, we haven't been able to cover at the range that we had set our goals, that we have concentrated on those areas where we think there's an indication where there might be. But yes, it is possible that, yes, we do have unsafe conditions out there, and the more we go out, the more we are able to identify them.
Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
That will open up the state to the broader municipal liability. Or should the liability rest with the utilities?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Starr, I believe the liability rests with the individual utility, and I think the state's liability would only be if but to some extent that we fail to act. I think that, and again, I'd have to turn to some advice from the Attorney General's office or someone here, but I believe that if we did not, for example, maintain an adequate program for safety inspections, that and there was some problem, there may be some liability for the state, although I think there are some exemptions on what you can on how you can sue the state.
Let me ask a follow-up to your question, because I think you raised an excellent point. When you go out and do an inspection on a utility, somebody's given a good housekeeping seal of approval to a utility, either doing something right or something wrong. Something happens out there in the field. If the state said it was okay and the utility is blamed for it, then why even have the inspection? I mean, what are you trying to achieve if it means nothing?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Starr, those are, I think, the unusual situations. But what we're trying to achieve is the case in which we find something that needs to be corrected and making sure that it's corrected. That's why we're doing the inspections. We're not out there inspecting something just to give someone a seal of approval.
Well, why should the utility be held liable for something that some of your staff went out and approved and said it was okay?
Mr. Chairman, I believe what would happen was that the utility, in its defense against liability, would use the fact that the commission said that it met the standard and it was approved as a defense against that liability. And I believe that is in part why the industry in many industries that are regulated support safety inspections.
What kind of, I guess what we're looking at are potential problems that could cause injury. What kind of history do we have of actual injuries since you've 1994, you haven't kept pace with your inspections. What kind of history do we have with accidents, injuries? I guess I'm looking for a rationale.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Starr, we have some performance measures in relation to state state goals, progress board goals. I'm trying to find where that is.
It seems like I saw something in some of the paperwork that showed that we have very low, very few injuries or accidents.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Starr, I think if we do, that is in part because we've tried to maintain a sufficient, that we have had a safety program. The State of Oregon Commission is a commission that has, unlike many others, we have focused extensively on safety inspections. What we have not been able to do is keep up with the growth in the need for those inspections. We have, as you can see through our performance standards that we've established, we have a steady growth in anticipation of the industry itself, the situation in industry, a steady growth in our goal in the number of inspection days. These are days when we actually get out on the field. And we have not, since 1994, been able to keep up with that. And we've had a significant decrease in December of 1998. And, you know, the utility staff doesn't spend all of its time, or the safety staff doesn't spend all the time out in the field. We simply don't have enough FTE to perform the on-site, in-the-field inspections that we believe are necessary to provide the assurances I think the public wants, and I think the utilities want. And one of those is in the natural gas area, where we have increased pipeline installation, and we have had instances on interstate pipelines where you've seen significant damage from problems. And we are reviewed by the federal government. Our program is reviewed by the federal government. And this is one of the things that they have encouraged us and said that they think that we need. Safety is an important and often overlooked issue. And it is something that we think is an increasing problem with the increased number of competition. The ODOT, the Department of Transportation's audit of our pipeline safety program concluded that 2.6 inspectors are necessary, and we only currently have two, and one of those spends a great deal of time on the Oregon Utility Notification Center, which was established by the legislature, that's sort of one call. It's where contractors and others can call and find out where things are located so they don't cause a problem by digging into them. We basically are sort of the agency that provides the coordination and supervision of that program, and one of our natural gas inspectors spends most of their time on that. So an additional natural gas inspector would be very helpful given the amount of pipeline that's there and the amount of pipeline that's being added. And we do the inspection for the federal government, basically, as well.
Okay. Thank you. You want to move on, please?
The final, another one in utility, and the page, budget page 67, is 106, which is outside services. This enables us to address some new workload issues that are associated with restructuring of the electric utility industry, and would not be spent. No new positions are being acquired, nor would the money be spent if it wasn't needed for this outside assistance. But the example we've used, what we focused on, is in the PGE restructuring case. We determined that the utilities that were to sell their generation assets should do so in a fair and open auctioning process. But we expect that if we proceed with that, we'll need sufficient commission oversight and actual implementation would occur after the 1999 session. We think assistance of outside experts would be valuable here because we don't need to bring on a permanent staff person for an issues that could be a short term in nature and may not be there in 2 years, but we're not very experienced. This is not something that we've done before in an auctioning process. And at least with these kinds of implications for restructuring, and we think that bringing outside services would make sure that we not only can make sure that customers get the benefits they need, but that we can do an adequate job of oversight of any auctioning process of resources in the context of utility restructuring.
Are these auctions a result of some federal legislation that you have to auction these plans off?
Mr. Chairman, the members of the committee know they are not. They are the result of a decision which we made in the PGE application for restructuring its company to provide direct access, and it is consistent with Senate Bill 1149, should it pass and require direct access and restructuring of the electric industry. To the extent that any restructuring framework required the sales of assets, we would require an auctioning process with commission oversight so we could make sure that ratepayers get the as much benefit as possible out of the
deal. Does 1149 have an auction process tied to it?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, no, it does not. It does, nor does it require utilities to divest of their assets. In this particular case, it was PGE's proposal and desire to divest itself of its assets. The commission determined the best way to do that was in an auction process. There are many types of auction processes, and we felt that rather than the commission, commission staff, which didn't have much experience with auction process, that for us to exercise the oversight that's needed over it, we needed the option to hire someone who was an outside expert to assist us in that case. Should the utility not proceed with an auction, then there would be no necessity to do that. This is really a contingency based upon an assumption that there will be some legislative authority to proceed with restructuring either through the PUC itself or through overall state requirements such as 1149. And it's a contingency in that we do use from time to time outside experts. The most recent example is we are trying to go to an outside expert to resolve a fairly wide disparity between the staff and Northwest Natural Gas over what the cost of capital ought to be in their current rate
case. Representative Butler.
Mr. Chair, I guess I'm a little bit confused about why, when we've got a willing buyer and willing seller, and the market price is established between the willing buyer and willing seller, why the state would intervene to come in and ask or to determine what the value would be as if there had been an auction between a willing seller and a whole bunch of willing buyers. I'm having a little bit of trouble trying to, because this appears to be an arm's length transaction.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler, that is not what we're doing. We are supervising the auction process itself.
But it isn't a willing buyer and willing seller that arrived at the price?
The auction process would arrive at the price. It's an auction. I mean, I'm not sure what your difference between a willing buyer and a willing seller in the auction process is. This is not an administratively determined value for the plant. It is a value for the plant determined by the auction process itself. What we are doing is supervising the auction process to make sure that the process is one that is run in a manner that assures that the ratepayers will get the most significant benefit. We are not administratively determining the market price. We are putting the assets would be put up for sale through an auction. It would be the commission that would supervise the auction.
I guess I'm still running the seller will not sell for less than what they feel that the assets are worth, and the buyer is not going to pay more than what that they feel that the assets are that they're willing to give for the assets. Why do we have to intercede ourselves as a state and determine, in effect, become a third auctioneer and ask, you know, that somehow the bits and pieces of the puzzle are put back together again in a different fashion and spend $175,000. I'm still just, it isn't a willing buyer and a willing seller situation where they will arrive at a price independently.
Chairman, Representative Butler, we envision this as an auction process, and it would be a typical auction process. Although there are different types of auctions and different bases upon which you determine the bidder in an auction.
Are we talking about the merger? Is that what we're talking?
Chairman, Representative Butler, no, we are not. We are talking about Portland General Electric selling off its assets, divesting its non-hydro assets in the process of restructuring to provide direct access to commercial and industrial customers. Our concerns and the nature of the state interest is to make sure that there is no abuse of market power, concerns over affiliated interest bidding. We want it to be an open, competitive bid auction process. But because we are dealing with a regulated utility, and because it is a process that we are approving, that needs to be supervised. And as I said, there are many types of ways to run an auction, and you have a lot of competitors as well who do not get the bid, who are going to be concerned and potential objections to the process. And it is valuable to have the commission establish and supervise the process for those reasons.
You might be aware there's a bill passed the Senate, 1149, that's coming over. There were three major power companies involved with the utilities involved with the bill. Idaho Power was exempted out. PGE worked out a separate compromise of divesting itself of some of the non-hydro producing things, and basically left one utility, which is PPL, in for regulation on this issue. What Commissioner Ekus is trying to say is that the commission has set up a method for disposing of those assets, PGE only, no other utility but just PGE. Some of the other participating utilities may find objections, as I understand you just said, to that method of disposing those assets because they're not qualified to bid or not qualified to participate. I don't know what your use of words were there, but something to the effect that they'd be prohibited from participating. The net effect is, if you look at 1149, it allows big electrical heavy industrial users to go in and negotiate contracts with utilities And I think the concern certainly that I had was what is the trade-off going to be for residential use? And I think that's what the commission is concerned about, that if we provide that additional help for industrial users, then what is the trade-off that goes with it, so we can all see what the numbers are up front.
Chairman, that's one of the concerns. I think you've highlighted the two concerns. One is that we want to make sure that the utility is in fact getting the highest benefit for it, and the second is that the auction process is one that some parties may feel this is not one in which parties feel that may want to bid, or that are impacted by the bid feel that they are disadvantaged by the nature of the process.
So the first,
Representative Patrick.
I just wanted to, aren't there specific statutory or requirements in terms of how the bidding process has to take place? There's no, you shake your head, there's no legal requirements that were set up when you made this agreement with PGE. I mean, I would think the PGE would be responsible for it, and you could have your attorney general say, you know, did it meet with X, Y, and Z statutes? If it does, then fine, let them run the auction process, rather than hire some extra person or consultants to come in and do an auction process.
Chairman, Representative Patrick, there is no statutory authority directing an auction process or how to do it. The only statutory direction that really exists is that the utility cannot sell its assets without the approval of the commission. We established in the PGE case a condition. We established that if they were to sell their assets for these particular purposes, that it would be best to do through an auction process. We currently have a docket in which all of the parties are participating on how that auction process ought to be run. What we are simply saying is that this is an area in which we do not have experience nor a lot of expertise, and that in order for us to do our job of proper supervision under the statute to approve any sale of any assets and to do it through the auction process, which we think is the best way to proceed, that we may need some outside assistance to do that.
Representative Patrick?
It just seems odd to me that there's all kinds of public auction processes that there's statutes for and ordinances for, both at a city level all the way up to the state, how we dispose of excess property in a fair and equitable way. And it just seems like the company should be able to put up with that and put something up as long as it meets the public good requirements. And I just don't understand why it's such a complicated piece that would require $175,000.
I'd like to follow up on that and ask what happened when the baby bells all had to dissolve and get rid of some of their investments, and did we hire additional people back in those days to handle the disposal and the breakup?
Chairman, I wasn't there at the time, but most of that was a transfer of assets. That was a splitting up. It was really a transfer of assets from one part of an existing company to another company. As to Representative Passage's question, these are not assets that the commission owns. These are assets the utility owns. Existing statutes and processes that I think you're citing apply to government property. This is not government property. We have a responsibility. We have the authority to approve the assets. The reason we have that authority is we do not want the assets disposed of in a way that disadvantage customers. And we believe that the auction process is the best way to do that in this case, because it is, in fact, a competitive process. As Representative Patridge indicated, there are all kinds of ways to do this. PGE has decided they need outside assistance and has hired Merrill Lynch to assist them.
When was the last time that an asset by a utility was dissolved or sold or in any way traded?
Well, the biggest one was probably Boardman.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I believe the most significant one would be the Boardman plant, and I believe that was sold in the early 80s.
Was that by auction?
I don't recall. That was a, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, that was negotiated, but that was a single plant. What we have here is a utility trying to get rid of all of its non-hydro resources, not a single plant. Now, there are questions of whether they will do it plant by plant, whether they will do it in cell groupings of plants.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to clarify that this goes forward with or without the passage of Senate Bill 1149. That bill is moving or not moving or whatever it's doing over in the House, but this particular issue moves forward anyway. Are there other, what have other states done? I mean, there aren't a lot of them out there that are that far ahead of us, but there are a couple.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Duke, first, this will only go forward if some kind of legislation passes, either 1149 or legislation we've introduced that would allow us to proceed with the PGE order. If it does not, then there's no need for this expenditure. Other states have taken various types of approaches, and the auction process has been used in other states. Other states are a little more complicated than they might be in this case, because some of the utilities that have sold their resources by auction have done it through they're multi-state utilities, so they're multi-jurisdictional issues. The auction process has been used, and in many states the commission has exercised oversight. I don't know the degree in which they felt they had expertise. In our region, resources that the utilities own are not sold very frequently. We're just not sure that we have the resource capacity to do this, particularly when PGE has additional resources on its side to determine what the auction process ought to be and how to supervise it.
Representative Patrick, I pointed out we're supposed to have a work session this morning on Boley, and we're supposed to begin at 9. The participants are here, and we're going to have to carry this over apparently one more day, having a hearing on the PUC and a work session tomorrow on Boley. But I know some of the members have to leave shortly before 10. The Senate convenes at 10.
9:45.
Or 9:45. Yeah. And so that only gives us about a half hour to go into work session here. So if I can get the members to hold briefly, and Commissioner Inkes, how many more decision packages are there to touch upon?
I think there are three, but one's fairly quick.
Okay, let's do that tomorrow if we can, because I'd like to move to this work session. The co-chairs are interested in some bills moving out of the subcommittee. So if there is no objection, we'll close the public hearing and work session until tomorrow on the PUC. Staff wants to make a recommendation.
You
carry it over until tomorrow.
And then if you intend to do the work session tomorrow, we need to extend the capital over the work session and we'll carry that over.
Okay. So we close the hearing and possible work session on Senate Bill 5522 and hold it over until tomorrow. And we open Senate Bill 5521, Real Labor and Indexing. Thank you. Because the co-chairs left Bowley out. My marching orders are very
clear. Run on the plan.
Colonel Plank has turned it out.
From the old
ain't on that thing.
Mr. Roberts, welcome back.
Yes, we were here 3 months ago for a public hearing. How quickly you turned time. And I have handed out about 9 pages of documents. The first 3 are the memorandum with the recommendations. Then there's a 2-page spreadsheet, and I've also attached copies of fiscal impact statements for 3 of the bills which affect the Bureau's budget. Yeah. We've discussed 2 of them, and I'll go into a little bit of detail on the 3rd one, which has come up since then, in a few minutes. We had the Bureau had finished public testimony and public hearing, and we had just started into work sessions. So if there are no questions, we'll go right into the spreadsheet.
Does everybody have a copy of the material in front of them? Okay. If you want to proceed, please.
Okay, the spreadsheet is about page 4. So we'll just quickly go through, starting with the 1997-99 legislatively approved budget, the numbers there. the total budget was $18,665,338, with an FTE of 127.2.
There was, if the recovery looked like this. Got it. We got it. There you go. Okay. Page 4 in your packet there is in the spreadsheet. Page 4. There you go.
So we have the total legislatively approved budget, and then the adjustments that were made to reach the current service level were $534,009 for administrative adjustments. The merit increase was $193,985. Vacancy savings were $61,187. The personal service cost adjustment was $20,616. There was a $38,372 reduction for elimination of the private employment agency licensing program and the half FTE. Inflation increase was $291,276. And a decrease in state government service charges of
$177,404.
Cindy, can you refresh our memory on why did we eliminate private employment agency licensing program?
Perhaps you
would like to. Cindy, because the legislature last year eliminated the licensing requirement.
Oh, I see. We passed legislation. Mm-hmm. And the reason was?
Because the nature of that industry has changed. Most private employment agencies no longer work on applicant paid. It's paid by the employer. And the feeling was the employers could adequately oversee that. The consumer protections provisions are still there. We still enforce that if people have consumer complaints where they're not given the disclosure they should have. But the actual licensing turned out to be more trouble than it was worth because we didn't feel that in the industry as it is today, you really needed it. And many other states have already eliminated that.
The employer pays for the placement costs.
In the majority of cases, that's correct. There's still some that do both, and there are a few that are applicant paid only, but it's a very, very small portion of the industry. And the feeling was if all we did was license that, there wouldn't be enough of them to pay fees that would support that licensing activity. And so we felt that given this was passed back in the 1970s, when almost all employment agencies operated on applicant paid basis. And since the industry had changed and there's been change in other states, and we looked at that and decided that we believe the licensing portion of that should be eliminated. And we support the bill last night.
Okay. This is the order continues, please.
Yes, the current service level was $19,428,261.126.75 FTE.
Representative Carr.
I move approval of the PSL at $19,428,261.126.75 FTE.
Representative Carr moves that we accept the current service level figure for the 99-2001 budget of $19,428,261 and $126.75 FTE. Is there discussion on this? Is there objection? If not, it's been so approved. Christy?
Next on the spreadsheet are the packages, and if you'll turn to the second page of the spreadsheet for a little more detail on the packages. We may have discussed these last time. We'll just quickly review them. There were two parts to package 090, which is program reduction. The first in the civil rights program was a general fund reduction of $35,944. This was part of the agency's 5% reduction option, and it eliminates a vacant part-time office specialist position. The legislative fiscal office recommends approval of the request.
Your pleasure that we go ahead and move on each one of these packages as they go down?
I'm open to the preference of the committee, but I think if we can go through
each one and then just move the...
And then just move the entire package to LFO recommendation, I think might be more clear.
Okay.
Thank you.
The second package, 090, was a fund shift. And it reduces general fund $282,007 and moves it to other funds. This was also part of their 5% reduction option, and it's just 2.5 FTE in the wage and hour division. These were investigators and a half-time manager. And there was sufficient revenue to fund this shift, and apparently no short-term service impact. And I see something missing off of the spreadsheet. The Legislative Fiscal Office recommends approval of this request.
This is a request for a reduction of the general fund, but you move it to other funds.
Right, pay it to the agency.
Yeah, okay.
Put this in the package.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, question for Erico. So where is the 2.5 FTE you mentioned that was a shift?
The 2.5 is not a reduction, it's just moved from general fund to other funds.
Mm-hmm. So there's no change in the number.
The net effect is no change in the FTE function.
Okay, Kristen?
Package 101 is in the Commissioner's Office and Program Support Program, and this adds a case presenter in the hearings unit to represent the agency in contested case hearings, investigating violations of prevailing wage rate laws. Increased enforcement activities have increased the requests for contested case hearings about 37% from 97 in fiscal year 1996 to 133 in 98. The Legislative Fiscal Office recommends approval of this request.
Is there discussion on that? You want to continue, please.
The next package is 401. This package is $86,534 other funds and adds a wage and hour specialist position as staff in the compliance area. The 95 legislature directed increased enforcement activity, and prevailing wage rate investigations have increased substantially. Claims have increased, and administrative law proceedings have gone from 2 or 3 per year to 17 in 1998. The Legislative Fiscal Office recommends approval of this request.
You've heard the LFO recommendation. Representative Starr?
I move approval of the LFO recommendations in package 090, package 101, and package 401.
Okay. Representative Starr moves that the committee adopts the LFO recommendation on package 090, 101, and 401.
And there were two elements on 090, right? Yes, there are two 090.
Civil rights.
And right. Is there a discussion on this motion? Is there objection? If not, it's been so approved. Do we have any further discussions to do here?
Yes. Bureau was asked to provide reduction options of 4% of general funds.
Mm-hmm.
And in April, the Department of Administrative Services recommended revisions to the governor's recommended budget, reducing general fund expenditures an additional $320,768. And these reductions were in both services and supplies and personal services.
And that's 4%, so I'm sure.
Representative Schrader wanted to know what the percentage is.
It was an additional 2.6. They have taken the 2.5 reduction in their 090 package. And if you approve the additional reductions of $320,768, and some general fund, attorney general reductions, that would be another 2.6%. So they would have taken a total of 5.1.
But 090 in part is just a fund shift, isn't it, Christy?
It's a general fund reduction.
Okay.
And that's what the co-chairs is consistent with their
right,
that's projections and reductions.
Right. Mr. Chairman.
Yes,
indeed. Mm-hmm. I have a question regarding the interstate travel reduction, $15,600, and the explanation is it's eliminating wage and hour use. What is that?
If you turn to the second page of the memo, there's a little more explanation of that particular reduction that of the memorandum.
Mm-hmm.
There's actually two pieces to the in-state travel. They're reducing travel in the Civil Rights Division in the amount of $6,000. And they're also going to eliminate the seat and just rely on the agency motor pool in the wage and hour division for $9,600. So that would be a total of $15,600.
Mr. Chair, I move the LFO recommendations. So.
Senator Kitsap now moves the LFO recommendations that we make the final 2.6 reduction in general funds and adjust the Attorney General's fees to give a total reduction of 5.1% to this budget. Is there discussion? Is there objection? If not, it's been so approved.
Budget notes or anything?
Yes, we have one more thing to discuss, okay. And that's the legislation that affects the budget. We had already discussed two of the bills last time. We can just review them real quickly. House Bill 2154 is the funding for their injured worker program using the workers' compensation fund. And this passed the House, and it was sent to the Senate Public Affairs Committee in February 24th, and it has not moved at this point. So I was recommending a budget note. If you take a look at that on the second page of the memorandum, I'm recommending a budget note which would say the subcommittee approved $466,436 other funds expenditure limitations for the Civil Rights Division's Injured Workers Program with the understanding that the Department of Administrative Services will unschedule the funds if House Bill 2154 does not pass.
Representative Patridge now moves that the committee adopt the LFO budget note as it relates to House Bill 2154 in the Senate Bill 5521. Is there discussion? Is there objection?
If not, it's been so approved. Representative Starr.
I would move the legislative adopted budget of $19,435,285.129
FTE. I'll accept that in your second. We have one more budget note. Right below that is the second budget note on House Bill 2027. And we need to incorporate that before we can take final action. Tricky?
Okay, House Bill 2027. I don't think we'll need a, apparently we won't need a budget note for this one.
Does this come back for a board expenditure authorization to increase it?
What I'm recommending is that we just increase the other fund's expenditure limitation for that amount. This bill has passed the House and Senate. It's already been signed. And it involves other funds expenditure of $169,398 approximately and 1.75 FTE. And if you just increase the other funds expenditure limitation for that amount, then that will accommodate the passage of the bill. So we'll be there.
Senator Shetab moves LFO recommendation to increase the other fund's limitation to accommodate the passage and signage by the governor of House Bill 2027. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator E.
This is already included in LFO's budget. It's already included.
But I just put it on that spreadsheet just in case.
But she put it on the spreadsheet as a separate item. Yeah. Is there objection to adding this? If not, it's been so approved. All right. What else do we need to do?
Do you have to amend? Will we, in essence, doing the amend section one, deleting $12,785,056?
Yeah.
That's what we did?
We deleted.
Okay.
The amount reflects the change.
Okay. If we are completed with LFO's recommendation, I would move Senate Bill 5521 to the full committee as amended and recommended with a two-pass recommendation.
Senator Kutab now moves Senate Bill 5521, Bureau of Labor and Industries Budget Bill, to the full Ways and Means Committee with a two-pass recommendation. Is there a further discussion?
Chair,
Representative Beck.
I'm going to be voting no on from here on all budgets for general fund until I know how much money my school is going to get. But I have no reflection on my concerns with this budget.
We appreciate your explanation and hope you live long enough.
I'll try to. I'll be voting no for a very long day.
Sure, I apologize that I had to be out of the community doing something for the fell apart and slipped back to get through again.
Oh, I see.
It's my amendment that I'm concerned about. And I just have one question. Are the T21 field reps in here?
The additions that we talked about?
Uh-huh.
No, this really works.
Okay, thank you.
All right, the clerk will call the roll, please.
Aye.
Yee.
Aye.
Lynn.
Aye.
Duke.
Aye.
Manny.
Aye.
Beck.
Aye.
Grader.
Aye.
Butler.
Aye.
Matthew.
Aye.
Star.
Aye. And the motion carries. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Could you like to?
Okay.
Yeah, that's my question. And the Senate. Not on the school, but they get
different.
Representative Patrick Bill, there at the House.
Okay.
All right. If there's no other business, we are adjourned until 8 a.m. tomorrow. All right.